Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
It's March 11th, 1811. And another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Aria, Rebecca, and Ollie, the Retrospectors.
When a party of irate textile workers broke into a factory just outside Nottingham today in history in 1811 and destroyed 63 knitting machines under the cover of darkness, they didn't have a name for the movement they were starting. But before the year was out, they had attracted a label which has survived to this day, the Luddites.
Yeah, so after enough smashing had gone on, British troops dispersed the crowd of protesters who were there basically advocating for improved work opportunities and better wages. But that wasn't the end of it, because the disgruntled workers then went on to vandalise textile machinery in a nearby village that same night. And then subsequent attacks occurred initially on a nightly basis and then a bit more intermittently, and eventually in waves spreading across this whole 70-mile region of northern England, from Loughborough in the south to Wakefield in the north. And basically concerned about the possibility of this becoming a whole nationwide movement, the government then deployed thousands of soldiers to safeguard factories, and Parliament enacted a law saying that breaking machines was a capital offence. You could be killed for it.
Yeah, I mean, you can see why the authorities became scared of this seeming epidemic of machine smashing that was spreading across Nottinghamshire, Yorkshire, and Lancashire, because to them it sort of came out of nothing. These machines weren't new, the things that they were upset about. The stocking frame, which was a knitting machine, had been invented 200 years earlier. But it had always been controversial. Actually, Elizabeth I denied the creator of the stocking frame, William Lee, a patent, because it might lead to the end of hand knitting. And, you know, she'd sort of recognised what eventually came to pass, which was that if the political circumstances and the economic circumstances coalesce so that people feel impoverished and their jobs are being taken by machines, they're going to be angry. And as we noted in our episode a few weeks ago on the Cato Street conspiracy, you know, we're in 1811 now. This decade in particular was a really difficult one for the British government, because it was a really difficult one for the working classes. Soldiers are coming home from the Napoleonic Wars and their families don't have anything to eat. You have the Peterloo Massacre in this decade. This is the background to this burgeoning sense among workers that they need to demand more.
Yeah, and this was particularly the case for Nottinghamshire, which depended on the stocking trade. That was the industry of the town. And, you know, the Napoleonic War had had a big impact on the economy because it had cut off the continental markets. But also the hosiery industry in particular had to contend with the fact that trousers were beginning to become an acceptable alternative to stocking. So the whole industry was very tightly stretched. And as you mentioned, the stocking frame had been around for a long time. But what had changed in more recent years was that initially the knitting of the stockings was done by individual workers at home working on their own stocking frames. They were self-employed artisans. They were proud of their skill, protective of the craft, which required a 7-year apprenticeship. And the gradual transplantation of this work into factories in the late 18th century had made those previously independent craftsmen into, you know, drones. Their comings and goings were now dictated by bosses. Those factory bosses were looking to cut corners. And increasingly, the skilled knitters who had been making one-piece stockings before were being undercut by what were called cut-ups. These were big pieces of fabric woven on wide frames from which the shapes of the stockings would be cut out and stitched together. And as you can imagine, those lower quality mass-made stockings could be turned out by non-skilled workers. You know, the master knitters derisively called them colts. They hadn't served their apprenticeship. They were almost like scabs. You know, they were undercutting the skilled workers. And it was all of this that was coming to a head with the more recent factor of the Napoleonic Wars, which was driving down wages. It was suppressing the economy. And the contemporary chronicler John Blackner, he wrote History of Nottinghamshire, he described how the protests who ended up destroying the stocking frames on this day were complaining about the factory owners for, quote, reducing the established prices for making stockings at a time too when every principle of humanity dictated their advancement, i.e. people were suffering.
Well, the Luddites got a really bad rap. You know, the authorities obviously painted them as being really violent and destructive.
Well, they were violent and destructive.
Destructive, yes.
I mean, let's be even-handed here. They were doing violent and destructive things.
Okay, so they were definitely smashing up machines, but they weren't actually hurting too many people. And in fact, the violence tended to be focused on them. There was a particularly bad incident in April 1812 when approximately 2,000 protesters besieged a mill near Manchester, and the mill's owner just ordered his men to open fire on the crowd, and that led to the deaths of at least 3 people, and another 18 people were injured really badly. And then the following day, soldiers killed at least 5 more of the Luddite protesters. Again, earlier that month, around 150 protesters got into an exchange of gunfire. So yes, there was a little bit of violence going on with defenders of another mill in Yorkshire, and that resulted in the deaths of 2 Luddites. And in response, the Luddites in that region then killed a mill owner who, amid the protests, had allegedly boasted that he would wade through Luddite blood up to his breeches.
Yeah, that was William Horsfall there, the guy who was murdered, who, yes, was an outspoken anti-Luddite, but was killed in cold blood one day as he went about to inspect some cloth. And that murder shocked the Parliament, shocked the country. It was described in pretty vivid detail. This is from the Leeds Mercury. 4 men inflicted 4 wounds in the left side of their victim, who instantly fell from his horse, and the blood flowed from the wounds in torrents. Mm-hmm. So there was suddenly a sense that even if you understood what the grievances were of these artisan workers who, as you were saying, wanted to work from home. It's funny, isn't it, when you think about what Luddism has come to mean, that actually we're now thinking about this 200 years ago as a debate about whether you should work from home or not. But even if you agreed with where they were coming from and you agreed that, you know, their product was being undervalued and their artisan skills were being disregarded, this had become something that just felt kind of fundamentally un-English, I guess. It just not the sort of thing we do.
Yeah, and it's a mistake to assume that Luddites were ideologically opposed to the use of machines. As we mentioned, many of these technologies had been around for decades at this point. What they wanted was what we would call a living wage. They didn't mind whether factories were using machines or not. You know, they destroyed the frames as a symbolic gesture, yes, but also because in an era when, and you've got to recall that at this time, striking, forming a union, collective bargaining were all outlawed. This was one of the only ways that you could communicate your disgruntlement to your boss. You know, you couldn't form a union, you couldn't go on strike, you'd end up being transported to Australia or clapped in irons in prison. So it really is a mistake to look at this as a symbolic gesture against technology. That's not what it was at all.
No, and in fact, that use of the term of Luddites to mean a group of people who are anti-technology and anti-progress doesn't emerge until the 1970s.
And actually, the origins of the term Luddite are quite interesting. So Ned Ludd, who was alternatively known as Captain General or even King Ludd, made his first appearance during a Nottingham protest in November 1811 and quickly became a figurehead of the movement. His supposed command of unseen armies became the thing that the government was sort of concerned about, and authorities really were consumed with the task of locating this Ned Ludd himself.
Who was a completely fictional figure.
Yeah, he was a completely fictional character who had derived from an incident that supposedly occurred 22 years earlier in Leicester, where, according to the tale, a young apprentice named Ludd or Luddham, while he was working at a stocking frame, was reprimanded by a superior for knitting too closely. And instead of complying with the order to square his needles, the enraged young apprentice took a hammer and flattened the entire mechanism. And this whole story reached Nottingham, where protesters adopted Ned Ludd as their symbolic leader.
And in some cases, his address is given as Sherwood Forest, which is obviously a tribute to Robin Hood. And I do wonder if the reason that Lord Ludd turns up in a lot of folk songs at the time and became the emblem of their protest is simply because in a Midlands accent, it rhymes with Robin Hood.
Mm. The unrest spread across the industrial north and Midlands, and the action took different forms in different locations, depending on what the local industry was. You know, Luddites might target steam-powered looms in cotton towns. In wool towns, they targeted gig mills, a type of machinery that was used in finishing wool. And there was kind of a military precision to the operations. Gangs would smash their way in with their faces covered, break up all the frames with sledgehammers and flee, all with this speed and expertise. You know, they had this name Luddites by now, and there was a real fear that, especially with the memory of the French Revolution still pretty fresh in the British aristocracy's mind, this element in particular needed to be cracked down on.
And a lot of them couldn't read or write, obviously. So there must have been a feeling of, like, how are they doing this? They're not educated. How are they distributing these messages to each other? How are they organising? And the answer was partly things like oral tradition and folk music, which is why General Ludd becomes the thing they're all looking for, because that's what they're singing about. Anyway, as you said, this led ultimately to February 1812 and the Frame-Breaking Act, which went a step further than previous acts that had made frame-breaking a criminal offence. It now carried the death penalty. And ultimately, that is what ended this first wave of Luddism, because however committed you were to the cause, you didn't want to die for it.
Yeah, and it passed in the Houses of Parliament despite the protest of Lord Byron, who used his maiden speech in the House of Lords to oppose the bill. He said that it put the lives of human beings below the value of factory machinery.
You know, it's funny, I'd never think of Lord Byron as actually talking in the House of Lords. Do you know what I mean? It just feels like, because he's a poet, you just think, oh yeah, and he was a lord, but everyone was a lord back then.
I'm just like picturing him, he's like making the speech lying on the benches of the House of Lords, like an opium pipe in a velvet dressing gown or something.
Tomorrow.
Too young for school, too big for his playpen, too small to hit, not old enough for jail, and 100% anti-establishment.
Ditch the ads and get a Sunday episode when you join Club Retrospectors. Patreon.com/retrospectors.